answered anything.
I don't think I got to meet Victor.
Welcome, everyone. How's everybody doing tonight? Welcome to the Well for all of you who are visitors here tonight. We're very excited that you're here. We just feel like we have a great opportunity tonight to get so many people from our community together to talk about this issue of homelessness in our community and to really educate one another on how we can help and coordinate with one another so that we can work together. My name is Gary Alloway. I'm one of the pastors here at The Well. And just to tell you a little bit about us, we are a non-denominational church who believes we are called by Christ to be the hands and feet of Jesus in the community. And part of that for us is serving the poor. And I think we really actively tried to engage serving the poor in Philadelphia. And as we were doing so, we came to see that there was a challenge right in front of us, that there was a need and poverty right in front of us. So we spent a lot of the last 2 years really trying to seek out what it means to serve the poor in suburbia. And we found it's not always that easy. We don't always know where to go or what to do. So this is the second forum we've had where we've invited a number of community leaders here to teach us, to help us to understand what it means to serve the poor in our community. So these are our speakers for tonight. And if you all just want to introduce yourself and maybe tell us, quickly what you do and kind of your connection to this topic. So,
My name's Cork Moyer. I'm the pastor of Stillwaters Church and the founder of Ministries at Main Street Mobile Homeless Shelter. I'm really not sure what we do. We are a church, and we view the church as being in trouble, particularly in the United States, because it's sort of lost its moorings as far as what its responsibility is. Some of the things that really shows actively, we throw the word ministry around as anything that we can administer, but the beginnings of the church were founded on taking care of the poor and the foreigner, and that has everything to do with hospitality, opening your doors and crossing borders and boundaries and all those kinds of things. So we are in the Pottstown area, and as a church, we aren't necessarily like any of the other churches, but what we try to do is complement every other church that is in town to make a wider body of Christ. And our niche in that is that we're made up predominantly of the poor and homeless, and with a further, part of our DNA is to educate the affluent church with its responsibility to that end. That's pretty much what we do. I know that's really vague, but you can talk to me later if you need specifics.
Okay. I'm Bill Burns. I run the emergency shelter for the American Red Cross in Levittown. It's a 75-bed facility that serves single men, women, families with children. We serve all comers. We serve victims of domestic violence. We serve mentally ill folks. We serve veterans. We serve working folks. We serve a big cross-section of the homeless population. Part of the mission of the American Red Cross is to alleviate human suffering. If that's on a battlefield, if that's in the middle of a disaster, there are only a handful of emergency shelters like ours in the country that the Red Cross runs. Last year, we provided over 27,000 bed nights of shelter. Our capacity is, our utility rate, we're full almost every night of the year during cold nights, and maybe we'll talk a little bit more about code blues and code reds later on, but we have a 10-bed overflow capacity. And I've been working with homeless folks for the past 15 years, New York, San Antonio briefly, and in Philadelphia. And I've been at the Red Cross here in Bucks County for just a little over a year. And I'm really amazed at the grace and goodness of the people who are really committed to working on this issue in this community.
Hi, my name is Vitor Vicente. I'm the director of the Bucks County Department of Community and Business Development. Our department is responsible for the administration of federal, state, and county funding, including the Community Development Block Grant, which is a federal program, the Home Partnership Program, which is also a federal program to develop affordable housing, Emergency Shelter Grant, which we allocate to the shelters such as the Red Cross to support the operations of the of these organizations, the housing group, as well as the Woman's Place. And we also have Administer a Housing Trust Fund, which the county has, that was enacted under Act 137. Now, we don't deal directly with the public. We contract with nonprofit organizations, all sorts of nonprofit organizations, for the services as well as the housing rehab and housing development and everything that we do. So we fund a wide range of programs under the CDBG program. To give you an idea, we typically issue anywhere between 40 to 80 contracts every year. That's just on the federal funding. On the home program, we fund organizations like Interfaith, Habitat, as well as organizations that are trying to acquire facilities for persons with special needs, whether it's persons with mental disabilities or other types of disabilities, including drug and alcohol abuse and so on. So we do quite a bit. We have a small staff, and as I said, we primarily administer the funding. We have three boards. Excuse me. One is the Community Development Advisory Board, which is made up of representatives from 12 communities, as well as 12 citizen representatives appointed on the basis of geographic area, and we try to seek some sort of diversity as well as balance, in addition to geographic balance, gender, ethnicity, race, and so on. And it's always a challenge, given that Bucks County, it's so uniformly white population, 92% of the population in Bucks County are made up of white persons. We have a housing finance board that basically reviews applications that are submitted for funding under the home or the housing trust fund. And we also have another group, which is a continuum of care as required by HUD as part of us receiving the other funding. So I will be happy to entertain any questions if anybody's interested in how do you go about applying for funding. As long as it's an organization, we will be willing to talk to you and help you and guide you through the process.
My name's Kathleen Roby. I am currently employed at Living Grim Foundation Drug and Alcohol Rehabilitation. I am a drug and alcohol counselor. I can say that I have experience being homeless, being a single parent of three children, and was able to utilize some of the programs that Bucks County has to offer to better help me become a better parent and get on my feet, and which helped me to be where I'm at today, which is have a good life, you know, a career. I am in school full-time working on a bachelor's degree in behavioral health, and no longer a single mother. So that's a little bit about myself.
Cool. Well, thank you all for being here tonight. We're just excited for this. And Donna, you want to come on up? I'm going to pass that down. And Donna, we're just introducing ourselves. So just a little bit about who you are and your connection to the topic of homelessness.
Thank you. I'm Donna McHugh, and I am a board member of the Bucks County Housing Group. And I'm also the Affordable Housing Chair this year for the Bucks County Association of Realtors.
Did you say you want me to say about?
Just that's good. Sure. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you all for being here tonight. And we're going to dig in. It's a nice, steamy, warm night here at the Well. If you guys have noticed, our air conditioning is a little loud. So it gets a little fun in here. But we're going to have some fun digging into this topic and seeing what we can learn tonight. So Our first question for our panel is homelessness a problem in Bucks County and in other Philadelphia suburbs? And if so, why? You guys can go in order, or whoever wants to.
I'm pretty sure that everybody believes. We talk a lot about our fallback positions, and I am not from Bucks County, so I can't speak for you guys. I'm here kind of representing for Montgomery County. We're from Pottstown, so we serve this little tri-county hub, which is Berks, Montgomery, and Chester counties. And the homeless population doesn't know what county they're in. They're homeless. They don't have a home anywhere. In Montgomery County, which is we cooperate with them with the county officials, with a Health and Human Services, and those folks, we work pretty closely with them, predominantly because they're the ones who whose arm will reach out to where we are. The other two counties are a little more affluent, and what they do is withhold dollars and resources and things like that. And we have this interesting paradigm where people try to not do as much as they want. So Montgomery County is primarily the ones that have stepped up. And in so doing, there is a part of their history where they believed they did not have a problem with homelessness until a homeless man died on the courthouse steps in Norristown. And then they had to figure out what to do with that, and they had to recognize and admit publicly that that there is a problem. They sent for a very good friend of mine, Jenny O'Donnell from Philadelphia County. She has been working in this field forever, and they brought her out to Norristown to begin a mobile homeless shelter, which is what we're modeled after. And since they bought a building for a dollar on the Norristown State Hospital grounds, they had to recognize that they had a problem. And what they did is they found a county solution for it, which wasn't the best. It was the one that they could afford, and she pieced that together. And after working a mobile homeless shelter that covers an entire county, some inherent problems were that you had to transport people. And in the winter months, that can get really dangerous. That's where we came in, and we began to as soon as they landed in a building and they had a stationary facility, we began our own mobile program locally in Pottstown, serving the three counties. And we went through our own evolution in that, trying to convince first the churches that there was a problem in Pottstown, because they knew of a couple people who were prominent, who they saw, who had matted hair and wore everything that they owned on the main street. But they didn't see the tent communities that were springing up all over the place. They turned their backs on the idea of sofa hopping and those kinds of things, which I imagine, you know, where in your location, that's probably what you have. People that are struggling with their families or struggling with addiction or struggling with mental illness, and so they have to get moved around because they tend to wear people out. I can only speak for the church. I don't speak for the county. I don't speak for the city. But the church, I had to spend a lot of time convincing, and me and my wife wore out nightly trying to keep this shelter going when the rest of the churches were saying there was no problem, until they finally, one by one, opened their doors and gave it a shot. And finally, they realized that this is what their calling is. And this past year, we ended up serving, I guess, in 4 months, 130 people that came through the shelter. And in this economy, this was a very bizarre year. We were talking about golf and places to vacation, because that's the new face of homelessness that's emerging now, at least in our area. So there is apprehension to even admit that you have a problem, because then you have to do something about it. And that's the evolution that we went through. And we're not there. We haven't arrived. But that's part of what we're dealing with our city officials and with some of the boroughs that are part of Pottstown have come against us with zoning and things. So they're still in denial. We aren't there yet.
I think, you know, the question of whether or not there is a problem has to be, there has to be some rigor applied to that, and there has to be some real numbers. When people started talking about homelessness 30 years ago, Mitch Snyder and some folks in Washington, they just pulled numbers, you know, out of their head, and they came up with a number. There's 1 million homeless people in the United States. Well, there's no methodology, there's no anything to that number, but it got quoted a lot and it put homelessness on the map. And, you know, God love them, that's what was needed at the time. And what's needed now is a way to really assess, you know, what that number is, and because that's going to drive the response, right? So in terms of Bucks County, Bucks County is one of the wealthiest counties in the nation. It's in the top 25, I believe. It has, in order to afford rent in this county, you need a household income of $21 an hour, right? Affordable rent being a third of your income. So the gap between affordable housing and people's income in this county is large, and we know that. Our homeless hotline, we have an 800 number that folks can call if they need shelter, received over 5,000 calls last year. Okay? You know, Vitor, I'm sure, can talk about the count. The county does a count, and they're developing their own way. And in fact, it's going on right this minute, a count of homeless folks in Bucks County, in order to determine how large a response is required. As I said, we were full almost every night of the year. We continue to see a need. We continue to serve people who are sleeping in their cars. We continue to see people that have been sleeping in doorways and subway stops or bus stops. The pastor mentioned people sofa hopping, people living doubled up, families living doubled up. A large percentage of the children we serve are actually referred to us from the county's Office of Children and Youth. These are people who have gone from the frying pan into the fire, who need a safe place to stay. So out of all of the bed nights for children, over 10,000 of the bed nights we had were for children, 43% of those were open CNY cases. So clearly, the numbers and our experience at the shelter determines that there's a significant need.
In preparation for my presentation here, I gathered some data and took a few notes, and I will be referring to them, and I hope you don't mind. As Bill indicated, Bucks County is one of the most affluent counties in Pennsylvania as well as the nation. Now, when I talk to some people, it's hard for them to imagine that there are homeless folks in the county. But homeless is a complex problem. It's not a one-size-fits-all, and it's not something that you're continually dealing with the same population all the time, meaning the same individuals. For some, homeless is a temporary event. It's not unusual for this day and age for somebody to be homeless once a year or multiple times a year. Sure. It's not unusual for somebody to be homeless once a year or multiple times a year. And there's a difference between short-term homelessness, which does not seem to be as much of a problem as permanent homelessness. That's people that have chronic issues that are often difficult to deal with. Families tend to encompass a large portion of the, or a large number of the folks in who are homeless. And in fact, the Red Cross takes homeless families. The housing group deals with homeless families, not individuals, I believe, and the same thing with a woman's place. One of the issues that I see is that the homeless is also a matter of definition. And there are different definitions, and the definitions have changed over time. When I first came to the county, we used to have more homeless people. The definition changed. We have less homeless people now. So if you want to reduce the number of homeless, you change the definition. Problem solved, right? Generally, the definition of homeless that we tend to follow is a person without a fixed, regular, and adequate nighttime residence, which I think that's generally accepted as one of the definitions. However, the definition affects how we count. You usually tend to think you count 1, 2, 3. Well, it all depends what populations you consider in your count. There's different kinds of homeless people, okay? There is sheltered and unsheltered, and you folks fund that, both of them. There is chronic homelessness, and our continuum of care deals with those, and it involves particularly persons with substance abuse problems, mental health problems, that kind of thing. There is the hidden homeless. Those are the homeless that the census has a tough time finding. And every decennial census, you may hear a big controversy about the census estimating people. Well, that's what the census does when it comes to trying to figure out how many people are homeless. Nobody really knows, particularly in areas like Bucks County that are in suburbia. There's people living in the woods. There's people living in cars. There's people living in places you would never imagine, under bridges and so on. There's also people who live with relatives that have no other place to go. Those don't get counted as homeless, but they are. And there's also people that are just one paycheck away from becoming homeless, or people at risk of becoming homeless. That's just to give you an idea. Another facet of these is that there is not just one single group that you can point and say, those are the homeless. Well, you got young people, and they have one set of issues, teenagers, runaways. You have adult individuals that for one reason or another became destitute and they have no place to live. You have families with or without children, and you have seniors, and you have persons with disabilities, and you have veterans. Now, each one of these has its own set of needs, is our own set of needs, and these are our own set of issues. Homeless can be caused by primarily two major issues, personal problems or structural problems. The personal problems are typically easy to discern. I mean, somebody who has limited education or skills, and they lose their job, they can't find a place to work, they can't afford to rent the house, they become homeless. You have people who have suffered from a catastrophic illness, and they become destitute and no place to live. Mental or physical disability, drug or alcohol abuse, domestic violence, or even just simple victims of crime. People who are released from institutions, including jails, they have no place to go. Divorce is one of the primary causes of homelessness, and particularly these affects single women with children. Parents or males that walk away from meeting their child care obligations tend to cause their former spouses and their children to end up in a shelter. Low-paying jobs or job loss. I mean, as I indicated, a lot of people are just one paycheck away for not being able to afford the place where they live. And just plain lack of a family to rely on. The structural issues, they are exogenous to the individual. They're outside of the individual's control. As you know, Bucks County has been undergoing tremendous growth in population since the 1950s. Since 2005, poor people in the suburbs exceed the number of people of poor in the central cities. It's the first time that you have more people living outside the central cities than ever before, and it's also the first time that you have more poor people living outside of the central city than ever before. Every municipality in the county, as in Bucks County, has lower income folks. Every one of them. Every municipality, including the most affluent, Solbury, Upper Makefield, Tinicum, all of those that normally tend to think of being upper scale, they do have low moderate income people. They do have people who are just poor, and some of them homeless. The cost of housing, as Bill indicated, is one of the primary issues in Bucks County. And even though things have slowed down somewhat, but, you know, it's the old law of physics, for every cause, I mean, for every action, there's a counter-reaction. Some people, the economy slowed down, maybe the price of housing slowed down, but guess what? Some people became unemployed, so here we go. The percent of income that people have to use to pay for shelter, it's mind-boggling. I've seen numbers like 50 and 60%, and that's not just for young people. This is for seniors across the board. Now, when you're paying or using that kind of income to pay for shelter, doesn't leave a whole lot for other things that you tend to think that you need, food and a few other necessities. So basically, you have people whose whole life surrounds around trying to juggle a whole mess of payments or bills with little time to do anything else. And there's also severe limitations in the quality of life. It affects where people can live, the opportunities they have for the type of housing that they need, leads to overcrowdedness, because sometimes the only way to be able to afford the rent is by having more than one family living in a place. And it's just mind-boggling. Dwindling employment opportunities for people that have high school or less education. Back in the days when this country used to have a very strong manufacturing base, you know, it worked. You basically graduated high school and went to local factory, and there was kind of a contract that you did your job and they gave you you kept employed. Well, that contract has changed. It's a case where you think you know the rules or you think you know the answers, but the questions change. Today, the economy is, for lack of a better term, more dynamic and continuous flux. And even for the low-entry jobs, there's tremendous competition, including people with some college degree or some college education or even a full college education, competing for entry-level jobs that normally you tend to think would be filled by somebody would be a high school graduate or less. So those opportunities have consistently been dwindling, and if you look at the numbers, the statistics or demographics in Bucks County for the length of time that people with high school or less stay unemployed, it's the heck a lot longer than for anyone with a higher education. But consistently, if you look at the graduation rates for all of our high schools, all of them fall very short of graduating close to 100% of the folks that go through the high school. And the final thing I'd note is the reduced purchasing power, because with the amount of, with the kind of economy that we have and the competitiveness that we have and jobs being shipped overseas and so on, you have people that making pretty much the same amount of money that somebody was making 10, 20 years ago. However, as you know, inflation kind of does a job on everybody, and prices keep on increasing, and what that means is the dollars that you have are worth less and less. So, yeah, we do have a problem of homelessness in Bucks County. I don't think anyone has a complete handle on it. I think there's very good people, like some people on this panel, whether in the organizations that we deal with, they do a tremendous job in trying to help people that are homeless try to turn around and turn their lives around. But it is a tough business for those folks. I don't know how they do it. I'm just glad that somebody like them is willing to do it on a day-to-day basis.
I can only speak from my past experience and from what I have seen. You know, is homelessness a problem in Bucks County? Sure. I didn't realize it till I moved here, because I am from the city, and it's more acceptable to be homeless, to be a drug addict, to have mental health issues. It's more open coming from the city opposed to being up here. And it's something, because I live in an area now where I do see people who live in tents, who live in vehicles, and it really has opened my eyes. I didn't realize I was homeless till I came up here in Bucks County. I thought living in all other people's homes, that's just how I grew up. I didn't realize that, you know what, I got three kids, like, they need their own home. I always knew I wanted that for them, but
from growing up as a child in a dysfunctional home, bouncing all around, living in a car once in a while. Hey, this is just what we did. So I can honestly say that I didn't realize that all this was a problem until I came up here and I got in touch with some of the right people that said, you know what? No, we can help you. You know, we can help you with a better way of living. And, you know, I find a lot of what you had said to be interesting because a lot of that stuff fit me. You know, coming from lack of structure in the home. Like, I was taught, go out and make money and that's how you survive. And I worked in a bar for like 12 years. And that's how I, you know, that's how I survived and raised my first two kids. But along with that came an addiction, you know, and working in that kind of environment, that just fed into it, you know, and not knowing where to go to get the right help, you know, because today when you go to doctors, they're quick to put you on medication. And of course, I'm going to be bipolar, have anxiety and all coming off of certain substances, you know, and I was given the opportunity coming to Bucks County, you know, to have people support me and care about me and say, you know what, you could do this, you know, because I didn't have an education. You know, I didn't know what was I going to do. Like, I went to welfare, humbled myself after making $1,000 a week working in a barn saying, help me. I don't know what I'm going to do. They should just bear with us. Like, we'll put you through a education program. You just got to be willing to do what you need to do. And for 2 years, I had to do that, and it was hard. Believe me, a lot of times it was hard because I wasn't used to it. But it paid off. Like, today, I can clothe my kids, and I struggle. You know, you say, it is expensive to live up here. Sometimes my head says, Kath, you can go back to the city and live and pay $800 a month opposed to $1,200 a month. But that's not me no more. I don't want to put my kids in an environment that I was in. You know, and God forbid, because they have the chance to go the way that I went, you know. But when I do have struggles, I know where I could pick up the phone and say help, you know. And I know that I have to show up and go to work and do these things that the people in this area have supported me through. You know, I might not call some of them for a while. They may not hear from me, but guess what? They'll hear from me when I, boy, this is getting tough. They say, Kath, you could do it, you know. And so is it a problem up here yet? Do people, from what I see, and I don't want to offend anybody, but from what I see is people are more, you know, put up blinders and don't take a look at really what's going on out there. Like, unless you've been in this through this experience, or unless it's right in front of you, you really don't see really what's going out there. And it's a heck of an eye-opener.
And to you, I say, you're pretty awesome.
Oh, well, thank you.
You really are. I'm very touched. I grew up a child of a parent, much like you. And it's what inspires me to do the things that I do today. It's what inspires me to be a part of the Bucks County Housing Group, because I know that they are out there to touch the lives and without judgment to help not just a single person, but the entire family to become together, or just to help you get back where you need to get. Good job. Thanks. Keep going. Some of what I'm seeing in my business today is also a big struggle and very disheartening. Some of what Vitor said was very difficult to see today is the elderly and how they struggle, desperately struggling without money to pay for their medication, with nowhere to live, the amount of years that it takes to stay on a list to get housing, to get low-income housing, decent housing that's based on their Social Security check. There are many of those people that are living on the sofas. I see it. It's the parents, the grandparents. They have nowhere to go because they're living on $8,000 a year. If you're $12,000 a year, you're making too much money to get food stamps. It's bizarre. We let them struggle. They don't have enough health care benefits to. I've tried to help people. I've gone to the Area Agency on Aging. They're lovely people. They're wonderful people. There's only so much that they can do. It's extremely disheartening that you can't barely find them housing anywhere. And I've encountered a situation where a letter came that someone didn't get, and this person was on the list for 3 years for this housing. It was their turn. Apparently, they didn't get the letter where it said, "Are you still interested?" So they went to the bottom of the list for another 3 years. That person resides in a not-so-great situation right now in a nursing home and would have had a better quality of life. I've seen people struggling with jobs, people that were once successful, people that are can't find work. For 2 years, they can't find work. And they are those people that are one paycheck away from being homeless, people that lived a grand, wonderful, very comfortable life, that have children, that are near destitute. It's not a happy thing to see. It was not a happy thing to see, to go to see how many people we're serving at the food pantries. I've been there a few times, and I paid a visit right before Thanksgiving, and I was speechless to see how many people couldn't even fit in the parking lot, and it wasn't open because there wasn't anything to give. I came to bring a couple bags of food and just handed it out in the parking lot. It's a tough time right now, and yes, we do have a big problem in Bucks County and Philadelphia County. Yes, we do. It's more than just the folks that have addiction problems. It's far-reaching right now.
Anyone want to respond to further on that question? Yeah, I think some of my background experience is working with urban shelters where it's just so, urban emergency shelters where it's so easy to find the homeless. There's 20 of them sitting outside the shelter that night, but in Bucks County, it's a different story for so many of us. We just never see people who are in homelessness. So I think that's such an issue for us, the invisibility of the whole thing, but just to know that it is there and that we need to be persistent and persevere, I think, is very important. Our next question is specifically about that, this difference between suburban homelessness and urban homelessness. For so many people, I think the stereotype of homelessness is the single man in Center City. But what are some of the differences between homelessness in suburbia and in an urban setting, both for how we address it as community organizations and for those going through it?
There are differences. Not in the people themselves. The differences are in us, the responders. That's where I see... Pottstown's an interesting place. It has all the difficulties of a city, and it's made up of five different townships or boroughs. So we have, you know, the trappings of the inner city and all the you know, difficulties that are there, crack dealers on the corner and things like that. But we also have this suburban area around Pottstown. And the thing that I know, anybody that works with the government, probably the people on the panel, go through this regularly when they're talking about HUD housing or they're talking about putting in a group home for somebody, that you have neighbors who don't want those kind of people here. And the one thing that... that will make you invisible, because what you can do is you can push it off to the next borough or push it off to the next town. There's really not enough money, and I feel sorry for people in government because they're tasked with taking care of our roads and a whole bunch of other things, and we unwittingly expect them to take care of everything, and tax dollars can only go so far, and nobody wants to pay more taxes. So they're caught between a rock and a hard place. And I have a great affection at this point for friends of mine who work in Montgomery County. And the things that they try to pull off, getting blood from a stone when all the while we have this wonderful resource called the church. And what we do in the church is we spend a lot of time, in fact, we'll claim it on our taxes, that we've done charitable giving. And we've given it to our church, and really what that is that's a kind of a club atmosphere where, you know, that money will go for repadding our seats so our behinds can be comfortable during worship. We'll find a thousand things to return our gift to ourselves in the way that we take care of our children and the things that we spend money on. We're not here to throw stones necessarily at the church, but what I was mentioning before is that the church is this resource of people who, because of Christ, care. And if they're following him as an apprentice, and Christ goes into those places, he crosses borders. This week we've been talking about going to Gennesaret. We've talked about, you know, we'll even allow a storm to come between us and going there, and what we might perish. And the idea is that regardless if we perish or not, we're the resource. We're God's resource. And in some way, what we can be is we can be a blessing back to the county because we're saving tax dollars by taking care of people who Christ has already commissioned us to care for. When we talk about those people, what we do is we're marginalizing them and we're creating excuses for ourselves. But in every city, in every suburb, wherever you have people living in a car, wherever you have people sleeping in a storefront, you have an empty church building at night. You got people paying for air conditioning, you know, 20-foot cathedral ceilings over their heads, and this colossal waste of money that could be going to something productive, not out of duty, not out of coercion, but out of this commodity, this kingdom of love and concern that should naturally want to do that. And the church is big. So out of that colossal waste of money, there's also people resources, too, to be able to man shelters and do different things of that sort. The only thing it takes is it takes the will to do that. And so homelessness, to the homeless individual, looks like, well, you heard what it looks like. That's what it is. I'm not sure what I'm supposed to be doing. I'm not sure that there's a better way. I'm trying to survive. And then there's a community right beside them that knows a better way or in some ways will be blessed by the community that needs. That's where the church really shines. That's where you really get to see what Christ's character really is when, for no reason at all, not because they'll like us, not because they'll join our church, not because, not for any reason except there is a need there that needs to be filled. So from the perspective of a homeless person, it doesn't look any different in a city or in a suburb, except that in a city there will be more lines for them to stand in and to be turned away. And there won't be possibly a homeless community to watch their backs. In a suburb, that's why you do have tent cities. What they're trying to do is recreate something that they might be able to find in a city, which is some semblance of safety, of them watching out for each other, taking care of each other's mental illness, diagnosing each other, and yes, even doing terrible things to each other. But I truly think whether it's suburbia or whether it's the middle of a city, and we have both in Pottstown, to the homeless individual, it doesn't look a whole lot different. It's us that need to change. It's us that need to see with new eyes. And to be brokenhearted that way. So that I'll have either the political will or the religious will or something to be able to do something about that.
Having worked in New York and Philadelphia and San Antonio and now here, I think the faces and stories are extremely similar. I think the challenges for those of us who are interested in intervening are different. I just have to say, thank God that the Bucks County Housing Group was there when Kathy made the call, because in fact, that's a testament to not some kind of esoteric geographic kind of boundary, but the power of social connection and people willing to do the work together as partners, as opposed to people just kind of passing out referrals and saying, come do this. And that's what the Bucks County Housing Group does extremely well. And we're really glad that they're our partners. And I'm really glad you found them. There are logistical challenges that we face, right? We made over 6,000 trips providing transportation for people to work, to doctor's appointments, to psych appointments, to DNA counseling, right? Because we know that fragmentation of care, which is like one of these social working phrases, leads to bad outcomes, leads to people decompensating, leads to people being less healthy, leads to kids missing more school, right? Because we work with the intermediate unit, which frankly is one of Bucks County's greatest attractions. I know New Hope is great, but before anybody in this country realized that homeless children were a problem, the intermediate unit and Tom Norlin were identifying these kids as a problem, and they were one of the first, I think they were the first in the nation, funded program that dealt specifically with the education of homeless children and youth. And as a result of that, good work, not only has that spread across the country, and I've worked with those programs in every city I've been in, but here in Bucks County, a child comes to our shelter on Wednesday, they're going to be in school on Thursday. So powerful is that link between education and opportunity, and so powerful is that link between experiencing homelessness as a child and experiencing homelessness as an adult. In fact, it's one of the best predictors. Experiencing homelessness as a child is one of the best predictors of experiencing homelessness as an adult. Right? So everything that we do is about blunting the edge to that. In the city, kids walk to school or they take the subway. Here, it's bus transportation, but you know what? Our kids get picked up first and they get dropped off last. It's an explicit appreciation and understanding and respecting of the stigma that gets attached to kids. Oh, she's a shelter kid, and kids getting teased on the bus. There are differences, but thoughtful people and programs like Bucks County Housing Group and like the things that VTOR funds and can really have significant impacts and outcomes, as you've already heard.
If you're a student of history, you look throughout time, people join together for safety, to protect each other's interests, and that's how cities came about, to trade and protect against common enemies, until we discovered suburbia. Then people start moving out to build castles, isolate themselves from each other. And when you look at the specific reality that we have in Bucks County is 610 square miles. There's countries smaller than our county, and I'm not kidding. There is a tremendous problem with the roadway system. There's really no good public transportation system, which is typical of suburbia. But I submit to you, if you try to go from Doylestown, just a simple trip down to Philadelphia, Center City, City Hall. It's 25 miles. It can take you, depending on the time of the year or time of the day, up to 3 hours. Not kidding you. Most of that trip is through suburbia. If you try to travel from Bristol to, let's say, Springfield, it's going to take you anywhere between an hour and a half to 2 hours. There is no good north-south roadway system. Most of our roads were basically just, I guess, an enhancement of the old dog and pony show where people sort of had the little carts pulled by horses or whatever and moved from one place to another. And then we paved those roads and made them major transportation networks. Now, if you're a homeless person and if you own a car, if your car has a flat tire or some other problem, mechanical problem, you got a major catastrophe because you're not going to be able to necessarily have the money to fix it. If you're relying on public transportation, given the system that we have, to go from one point, even just within the county, from one point to another, or to go to a job in Philadelphia, it can take you a commute of 4 or 5 hours each way, depending where the job is. So that places a tremendous strain on your ability to have a decent quality of life. And we always hear about these tremendous commutes that people face. I've never seen anybody as lower-income folks and the types of commutes that a lot of folks have to go through just to have a job. And God forbid they lose that job. They lose their house and they become homeless. Now, homeless folks in suburbia are hard to find. People are embarrassed to admit that they don't have a place to live. It's not something that you're really proud of, and it goes against all sorts of things that we grew up with. And there's a certain element of shame, and you lose a certain amount of dignity and all the little humiliations that you have to put up with that most of us do not have to deal with. And a lot of folks, and I think the housing group has a picture of somebody taken out of somebody living in a car, which is quite telling. And you can't find people that are living in cars unless they come in for services, or you can't find people in the woods unless they come in for services. So most of the homeless that you can track in suburbia, they're so dispersed, and unless they come in into the system, you don't really know that they exist. Now, one of the things that one of my colleagues up here mentioned is the fear. People move to suburbia, and you hear frequently people talking about property rights, and people pay the tremendous price for the house they live in. And they're afraid. They're afraid that anything will threaten their American dream. And when you have, for example, I remember years ago when Family Services decided to establish a facility in New Hope for people with HIV/AIDS. If you listen, or if you go back and read the stories that were going on those days, the whole world was going to come apart. That was going to be the end of that. We funded it for numerous things, and, you know, over time. And if you go up there, you can't even tell it's there. You don't know who lives there. It's just like a house like any other. And I submit to you that throughout the county, there's a lot of facilities like that, particularly a lot of group homes that are house people with mental disabilities that have no other place to go. But if you pass by, you can't tell who lives there. And most of the day when we go in and sometimes to visit these places to figure out and see firsthand what kind of needs may exist, whether it's replacing the roof or making improvements to the kitchen or simply installing a ramp that makes it more convenient because some of these individuals have physical disabilities, they're not there. They're at work, which is quite amazing. But it wasn't for that group home, these people would have no other place to live. Now, I used to live in the city for a good portion of my life, both in Europe and then here. And when I came to Bucks County, I began learning a number of acronyms that I wasn't familiar with, like NIMBY. I'm sure you're all familiar with that, and a bunch of other things. And I think part of that is the lack of understanding and the fear that a lot of folks have that something could threaten everything that they worked for. And I also think in some instances, it's the fear that for the grace of God, there goes I. So I think there's a lot of work that needs to be done in educating people that there is no need for fear, and that a homeless person is just one of our brothers or sisters in need, and they helping and can go a long way to producing a better community and a better environment. And I think that's also part of the American dream.
Some of the unique issues and challenges for a homeless person, just to put it simply, could be ignorance of lack of education, wanting to get to know how a homeless person feels, you know. A homeless person being afraid to let somebody know, like, what's going on with them. You know, a lot of times people look at somebody who's homeless as a bad person, you know, or being afraid. They might steal from me. They might rob from me. When reality is they have emotional issues. They have some deep-rooted problems, you know, that maybe stem from their childhood or something like that. And a lot of times I feel that people just don't take a look at, you know, an individual as an individual maybe with some problems. You know, I also heard up here, like in the city, there are more, from what I've seen, a lot more homeless people. It's more accepted in the city because you see a lot more of it, you know. But that does mean that a lot more doors will get closed in your face because they only have so much help, you know. I know for myself, if I didn't go through Bucks County Housing Group, like, I wouldn't have the life I have today. Me having the life I have today puts three other children to have the life they have today. So, you know, there's four individuals who benefited from one resource, you know, and it's a matter of, you know, setting your pride aside, being in these situations for myself and other people, like setting your pride aside and saying, you know what, I do need help. Like, that's the bottom line. You know, there's many challenges being up here in the suburban area. Transportation, I heard. Wow, that's huge. You know, how long does it take on a bus route to get somewhere? If you have a job that would literally take you 20 minutes to get to by vehicle, you could be on that bus ride for an hour and a half. But also being able to be resourceful, which is something that I've learned being up here, like, there is a way to get around that, you know, and I was fortunate to be able to experience that. Not all people are, you know, not all people are. So I think there is a big difference, you know, and education is important, you know, getting to know what goes on with a person who's homeless, you know, opposed to just looking at it, you know, as a big issue, you know, getting to understand what is it that makes a person homeless, you know, what are their struggles, what it is we can do to help them, you know.
Some of what I find a major challenge in the suburban areas versus the Philadelphia area, I'll agree with all who've spoken here, is that socially it is more acceptable. It appears to be more acceptable in the city setting. Transportation is so much easier to find in the city. Therefore, the jobs are easier to get to. When someone finds themselves in a difficult situation outside the city, it can be a big problem when transportation is the issue. Hey, I lost my job, and the only place I can find another one is in the city. Now, how do we get there? Because this shop closed down, and I need to go. Another issue that I have faced, unfortunately, numerous times, are single persons that are homeless. We don't have great resources outside the city for single persons who are homeless. We also have overcrowding, I think, a little bit more in our shelters out here. I've had to shouldn't say had to, I was asked to help, and it was my pleasure to try to help some families house their children who were displaced, and the family was losing their home. The parents were separating, and the children and their grandchildren live with them, and there wasn't going to be any place for those children and their grandchildren to live. So they called me and said, do I know of any shelters? This was a Bucks County family. I called three shelters. In the dead of winter, there was no room. That going back and forth, well, if you live here, you have to go there, and if you live here, you have to go there. It could be my ignorance and not understanding how the shelter system works, but it seemed a little hopeless that we didn't have anything for them out here, just surely because of overcrowding and a bad situation at a bad time. I've had gentlemen that were recovering addicts that were fine people. They worked very hard, but just a little tough on cash, needed some help, needed a hand, some place to live, and I wasn't quite sure where to refer them outside the city. I think that's a major challenge that we face here. Also, I find I've done a lot of work with children's charities and children aging out of foster care. It's frightening. It's frightening that we don't know what we do with them when it's time. I think we could take a more active role in helping them, and I know there's some agencies doing a fine job of educating them to have a trade or go forth in education. But I think it's a real huge problem, especially out here.
Hi. The next question that I had was, is homelessness a solvable problem? And just as I thought a little more about that question, I think what I was trying to get at is, what is our goal? We've faced that with our church. Is we know homelessness exists, but what is our goal? Is it to make everybody middle class, or is it to just provide basic needs to get a person through a day? As we go out, what are we aiming for? What does it mean to solve homelessness? Is it really a solvable problem?
I'm a pastor. And something that's uppermost in my mind as a pastor is this great commission that we kind of say really fast and don't really listen to what he's actually saying, actually telling us to do. I don't find any place that Jesus tells us to go and plant churches. I don't see him saying, go and make Christians or go and make converts. He says, go and make disciples, and those are apprentices. And then he says, go into, the actual word means culture. Go into the different cultures and make disciples. The word nations. We've discussed here tonight the idea that there's a different culture out there than the one I might live in. It's a homeless culture, and that there's diversity within the homeless culture. You know, whether it's an ethnic neighborhood or whether it's a suburban neighborhood or an inner city, there are all these different kinds of homeless communities, And we heard up here the idea that there is these needs, transportation needs, and giving people a place to sleep out of the elements, children, education. And if you know, it's been said that Sunday morning is the most segregated day in the church. We tend to want to worship with those who are the most like us and that kind of thing. And if our church experience really was taking care and going, crossing the boundaries and going into every culture and not forcing people to be a Christian, but showing them who Christ is by what we do for them, with them, not treating them as being different. Some of the stigma there is, I know several people, I know lots of people, who hate the idea of being done to. Oh, you poor thing, let me fix you. Can be really degrading, and we forget, you know, just because we've slapped a label of homelessness on people, that somehow they're part of the machinery, and we can go ahead and fix them, and now they'll be okay. So, and what we'll tend to do is think the answer to homelessness is to make them middle class. There is a culture there that I'm not looking as a pastor to mess around with. There's some things that are beautiful and there are some things that are ugly. All in all, Christ can live in those. So what does he look like moving around a tent community? There are several people that are in our area. In Montgomery County, we do a census. In January, every year, we do a homeless count, and the whole county participates, and we strap on boots if it's gross outside, and we trudge through the woods, and we find people and know where people are and know who's under a bridge tonight and who's doing whatever. And some of those people have made a decision that they don't want to be part of some of what we have to offer. And in many ways, they're really, really happy. And it would be terrible for me to judge them as being deficient because they've chosen something else. As the church, with all the gifts that we have, my job is then to know them. It crosses those boundaries and know them. Because something's going to happen. Somebody's going to break their leg. Somebody's going to fall down and get hurt. Somebody's going to fall into a fire, you know, and they got to know you. You know, you might be, you know, part of their solution to their immediate problem. So there are all these different cultures, and can you solve homelessness? I'm pretty sure that Jesus said the poor you'll always have with you. And the spin on that is we hear that as, and we've used it as an excuse that, well, you know, it's a drop in the bucket. You know, maybe we can do something about that, but, you know, we really can't. And we'll use that as a promise that we'll always have the homeless among us or we'll always have the poor among us. But if you think of it the way I think it was said, what I believe he was implying was you better have the homeless always with you. Mm-hmm. Now that's a whole different understanding of do what you can because they'll always be around. There's nothing you can do about it. Some things I want to do something about, some things I don't have to do anything about. All of it, I have to be personally involved. So if I'm a teacher, I need to bring that to that culture. If I'm a religious person, I need to bring that to that culture. If I'm a doctor, I need to bring that to the culture. If I have this beautiful building, I walked in the door and started counting out floor space because these chairs are great. They're stackable, they're movable, and when 30 people show up in this place, you have maybe 10 who aren't going to pitch in, but you have, you know, 20 who are going to start moving the chairs, and they're going to start stacking mattresses, and they're going to be appreciative, and there's a place back there to bring food in. And we haven't impacted their culture. We haven't told them that you're the wrong person. But what we've done is we've valued them. And then if there's an apprentice in the bunch, great. But what happens if there's people who are going to become part of the system of curing that? Because part of what we are as the church is we are the continuation of Jesus' ministry. And he promised us that we'll do greater gifts. You know, we'll do greater things than what he did. And that means in number. And I'll tell you what, where we've come to in medicine, it's remarkable. So for us to hoard that and keep it to ourselves, that is Matthew 25, where you haven't done it to the least of these, you haven't done it unto me. And I don't want to find myself in that position, because he also says, when you've done it to the least of these, you've done it unto me. And so I don't think we're going to solve homelessness by necessarily having everybody have their own apartment and a car in the garage and 2.5 children. What we will have is we will have what we've come to say in our church is equity, equality, and a genuine caring. And I think that that's the cure. It's not that there will never be homeless people, but what's happened in our area is we've had several churches that wouldn't be involved with us. And slowly, one by one, they came along. And I got to tell you, every single one of those churches will tell you that they are the ones who were ministered to. Every single one of them. And there was nothing inherently good in the way the homeless community or that culture acted in their churches, except abject vulnerability. And Jesus tells us constantly, give up your power. In fact, he gave up his, as an example. You don't win anything with power. You force people with power. And so being willing to sacrifice that way, these people had nothing to give. All they had was pulling up a cot, being really appreciative, sleeping on the floor, and having church folk have to watch them all night. And I'll tell you what, that'll change a person. That'll make me a little more appreciative of what I have, but I'll tell you what, it bursts my bubble of what I believe theologically and who I believe God is and the way I read the Bible and the way I can't pass somebody on the road anymore. And imagine, again, if the church would only do a little bit of that. And if there's a doctor here who desires that, to help people, heal them physically, it only takes one. And if you start networking with all the other churches, because, you know, frankly, I mean, we have nothing, do we? But all these other churches have stuff that we don't. And so all we've become as a church is a conduit to put these two communities together. You know, the communities that have buildings where people don't have a place to sleep. The congregations who have people that can do things with people who need those things. And placing them together that way is free. It doesn't impact governmental budgets. It doesn't increase taxes. It doesn't do any of those things. And if somebody doesn't like that, like a township or somebody who wants to create a problem that's also part of the Christian calling, which is even blessing those who curse you because we're saving their budgets. So it only takes one who has that, and I'll steal a word from you, Michael, who has that burn. And when they have that burn, then they talk to other churches. Can I get a bunch of doctors together who would help with some mental health issues, who will help with other things? Is there any way that we can get a hold of mattresses? Is there a camp that's part of your fellowship of churches that you can get mattresses from? All it takes is one person to have that burn and not be a lone gun. Include all the other churches. And you're helping to heal. You haven't made homelessness go away, but you have healed.
I guess my response to that question is driven by two ideas. The first, Dr. King used to say, the curse of poverty has no justification in our age. If that's true, then we need to be working on that on multiple levels, on structural levels and individual levels, and doing all the things we can do to eradicate that. Part of our mission, our advisor group that kind of met to come up with a mission or a vision statement, one of those kind of tricky kind of corporate things, came up with this goal of a home for all. What a radical concept, a home for all in the richest country the world has ever known. Is that doable? Is that feasible? I'm remembering, what this country did over 50 years ago in the Marshall Plan and rebuilt Western Europe through a divided Congress with an unpopular president. Billions of dollars got spent to do the right thing. The Nobel Prize was recently given to someone who was committed to ending poverty in India. What? Going to raise hundreds of millions of people in India out of poverty? Yeah. And he did it. You could get into the nuts and bolts. It's a housing issue, right? Absent housing, homelessness is going to be present. Creating safe, sustainable communities is a laudable goal for any group. There are people living in communities that are not safe. There are sustainable communities that are not safe either. So those twin kind of goals of developing safe and sustainable communities that build on the assets of the people that are part of them is absolutely possible, and we try to do that every day. And we had a lot of help from a lot of people to do that.
I'm not sure I know the answer to it, but I will tell you these. It depends. If you're talking about short-term homelessness, that happens quite frequently for a lot of people throughout the year. I think some things can be done, not necessarily to end homelessness, but to alleviate the causes that lead to homelessness. Maybe rental assistance, and some programs are already in place for that. Helping negotiate with landlords. We, for example, have a funding program that a partnership we started with Legal Aid to help them cover the entire county. And Legal Aid is staffed primarily by lawyers, but they're not the type of organization that'll go to court to sue somebody. Their mission is to help people assert their rights, and they'll go to court, for example, to prevent an eviction and having somebody turn out to be homeless because they're being discriminated against or because there's a violation of rights or there's something that, or a failure, sometimes just to communicate between two parties. I think there's probably the need to improve our whole system of communication and referrals and simply understanding what's available. And I will tell you these, and being a bureaucrat myself and working for government, I think the sensitivity that people in places that are supposed to be helping other folks could also use a lot of improvement in people understanding and not being as callous and in dealing with other human beings at that time of need. I know it's difficult because you see case after case after case after case, and after a while, if you talk to people in need, they say, gee, they don't really care. I'm just another case to them. So I do think that there is a need to improve there. I also think that there needs to be a greater focus on prevention. Most of the efforts that we have now is to deal with the problem after it materialized, not necessarily to prevent the problem from happening. So I think that prevention services can be critical in diverting people from a condition that we all, I think, can agree it's not desirable, which is having a family or an individual ending up without a place to stay. I also think that there's the need for a community-wide strategy. A lot of the programs that are in place, even though well-intended, they are kind of a piecemeal approach to trying to resolve the problem. And indeed, I mean, there's all sorts of needs, and this program is trying to address this issue, that program is trying to address this issue. We have a program in place which we affectionately in Bureau Trees called Tenant-Based Rental Assistance. Sounds real official. And that program is run in partnership with the Housing Group and the Opportunity Council. And it's a self-sufficiency program. And basically what it does, and since I've come to the program, I try to delegate those decision-making to the, as much to the experts, which are the people in the front line. At one point, we used to get involved in decisions of trying to figure out who is a good homeless person for the program. I don't know, and I don't think I want to be in the business of deciding that, so I kind of pulled our folks back a little bit from that. And it's a self-sufficiency-oriented program, and what it does is helps about 26 families a year, on average, to the best candidates, and those folks that appear to have or demonstrate the best characteristics to being able to go into a program and hopefully be put on the place to self-sufficiency. Now, a few years ago, all this was moving a nice along nice and dandy, and by the way, our success ratio is a little better than baseball's. I mean, if you're betting 300 in baseball, you're a success, right? Probably if we somewhere between 30 and 40%. And part of the problem is we used to be able to guarantee people that if they went through the program and they did everything right, there could be a housing voucher at the end of that. And then, unbeknownst to us, the rules changed. And today there is no such a guarantee anymore. I do believe that the problem of homeless needs to be solved by having more housing, decent quality, affordable housing, but I also believe that that in itself is not sufficient. You got to be able to afford that house. So you have to develop the skills that people may not have to be able to earn the income to be able to support that house and support the family. Of course, easier said than done. And people that are homeless, particularly those that are chronic homeless, they have a set of challenges. In order to address the issue of homelessness for those, it's not just sufficient that we provide them with a house or provide them with a job. We have to have a plan that kind of attacks as many problems as it can be addressed as part of returning them to be on their feet and being able to take care of themselves. Now, our modest tenant-based rental assistance program has been a success in many ways, and I think the credit goes to the housing group and the folks that they have working on these. But that in itself only takes care of 26 families a year, and it's really a bare scratch on what is out there. I do think we need to have better and clearer goals, going back to your question, what are we trying to accomplish? And maybe we cannot ever resolve the problem of homelessness because it may be associated with the economic condition. And Pastor, from what I hear, Christ himself was homeless.
By choice.
By choice. And maybe the climate over there was a little better than we have in some of the northern regions. No, just kidding. I do think we have to have a clear strategy and a clear understanding of what we're trying to accomplish. And maybe there are some people that we can help. And maybe there's some issues that we can address and prevent people from becoming homeless. And maybe we can have a strategy in place to help those that are homeless to move out of that situation. We also need, I think, sort of building up on that idea for each individual that is homeless that we try to help, that we try to understand and bring as many resources as possible to bear so that we don't just address one issue, but we try to take a comprehensive approach as we do in the example I mentioned that we have, to try to address as many issues and return those folks to their feet. One of the things that concerns me seriously about homelessness, even though these may not sound or come across as right, ultimately, everything we do is about children. And at times there may not be much we can do to improve or resolve all the issues that are affecting homeless adults. But I hope by God we can do something about those little people, and that we can move them, break the cycle, and that they can become productive citizens, and that we can create a better world for them. So, yeah, I certainly want to do as much as we can for all human beings, but ultimately, I think we need to worry about the cycle, whether it's doing the little things that make a difference in maintaining the dignity and creating opportunities so that we don't have another generation of folks back in a shelter.
I honestly don't know if that is something that could be solved, being homeless, because I feel as though there's always going to be more people who are going to be becoming homeless. And some people are okay with it. Like, some people don't want the responsibility of everyday life, which is okay for them. Like, who are we to judge? That's how they choose to live. You know, so is it something that can be solved? Not for everybody, I feel. And can be for some.
This discussion reminds me of something that I haven't thought of in a very long time. When I was a teenager just out of high school, my first real job was in a basement restaurant in the Bourse Building in Center City, Philadelphia. One evening, I encountered a young family come in with a little boy. The gentleman sat down to fill out a job application, and they ordered a bowl of soup for their son and nothing else. And I was waiting on them, and I asked if there was more that I could do. Could I help with their application? And the father had said to me, "Well, I've put in a lot of job applications today. I lost my apartment, and we're living on the street tonight because we have nowhere to live, and I can't find a job because I don't have an address." Well, I think that's a solvable problem. It has to be a solvable problem. That's an easy one. We could figure out a way to fix that one, I think. And I've heard that numerous times. Where do you live? Where are you from? Whose services can we give you? Do you belong to Bucks County? Do you belong to Montgomery County? Do you belong to Philadelphia? Whose sofa are you sleeping on tonight? Where do you belong? How do we help that person? I think that's a solvable situation. Can we solve everything? I don't think so. I think some of what Kathy's saying here is true. There are people that have resolved to be chronically homeless. Sometimes some of those folks will say that they've resolved that and they just need some guidance. And there are many people that will turn their nose to them and say, "Well, you choose to be this way, and therefore I'm not going to help you." The other thing that I think is a major challenge is, how do we get the information to help these people? It is difficult to find the resources and go through the motions to cross your T's and dot your I's. Do you qualify to be that person that gets the help? Are you that person? And if 26 families are helped, how many haven't been helped that could be helped? What could we do to change that? I believe that a great deal of our homeless problem could be solved with some very simple things that could be put in place, and then we could tackle the complicated issues one by one together. I think every person in this world has something to bring to the table. I think we all are here to help each other. I think we all want to bring something good to this world and do something productive while we're here on this earth. I don't think there's many of us that wouldn't want to help another person and pray that we're not that person that falls on hard times, but hope that those services are in place should we find ourselves in that position. And I think we all need to work hard together to make that happen.
All right, I'd like to open it up if people have questions either for the whole panel or for one person in particular.
I'm so glad that Donna brought up the question of the animals, because I've been running into that again and again and again. Somebody goes for a service that they were promised. Sorry, you can't get it, do you, because you don't have an address. I hope there would be a lawyer on the panel or a representative of the government. I haven't identified the one because if they're there, say something.
It's a Vitor in the middle is a government guy here. you can corner him afterwards. I'll put him out there. Go ahead.
Can you answer the question of what makes it necessary to have an address to get services, number one? And secondly, would it be possible for church members to offer their address legally for that purpose? And then take care of delivering the mail and all the other good things that are necessary.
I do not know the answer to that. And however, what I will do is follow up with legal aid and ask them that question, or I can also give you the number if you'd like to ask them directly. They'll be fine. And by the way, I mean, we do support legal aid, so if you have a client or, you know, somebody who, whether they are having complications getting their Social Security benefits or other benefits or having a problem, legal aid is a good place to call, and the only proviso is they have to qualify income-wise. I mean, if you're wealthy, they're not going to help you because that's not what they set up to do. Here in Lower Bucks, they have an office on 413 going right through Bristol. I think there's a name for the local road. I can't remember it. And the number is 781-1111. So if you can't remember the last four digits, then the first three are probably going to be able to. And, of course, it's 215. They also have an office in Doylestown. And you can ask. I would encourage anybody to call up and become acquainted with types of things that they can do, because their all sole mission is to provide legal services and intervene where someone who's having really a hard time trying to access a service. I apologize, but I don't really know the answer to that. But I will certainly follow up.
If I can respond to that real quick, there's a it kind of opens a can of worms. And the reason that it does is because, as I was saying before, any local government who wants to be obstinate to the idea of having a church host homeless friends, what they'll do is they'll try to use code enforcement to make that not happen. And what they'll do is there's actually no laws. There are no building codes for churches as shelters. If anybody tries to tell you that there are, there aren't. However, they have constituencies that they have to cater to, neighbors who don't want a shelter in their backyard and those kinds of things. So they look for words in building codes like sleep and temporary, and then they tell you that you have to rezone your church as residential. The 106th Congress in the year 2000, Bill Clinton signed into law the Religious Land Use and Institutionalized Persons Act. It's called the RLUIPA law. It's a federal law that says that a government cannot dictate ministry from the outside. There's a lot of flowery language in there, and basically what it's saying is that the church is autonomous. And if the church is butting up against certain rules that are part of society, such as safety codes, which is something entirely different, what they have to do is they have to give you the least impact solution. And the reason that I'm bringing that up about your question, I'm not sure why people need an address to get certain services. But we have used both the church as their mailing address and people inside the church. There is absolutely nobody on the planet who can say that somebody can't use your mailing address. What I was saying before about the church being the answer to healing these kinds of things is there are all these gates and hurdles and these difficulties that I can't get paid because I don't have this, but I don't have this, so I can't get paid. And there's this catch-22 in nearly everything to this community. One of the easiest ones to make that go away. And the church really has to count the cost on this, because there could be some people, and we experience this from time to time, who are not responsible, who we give them an address, and I spend a few minutes every day writing no longer at this address and sending things back and doing that type of thing. And you will have that, but I think that's a really insignificant problem to have when you're helping somebody get their ID and get their credentials back and get reestablished paperwork to be able to find a job and do to be able to get paid if they're disabled and those kinds of things. It's a very small thing to do for somebody in a church to say, you can use my address. And from the aspect of the church, a church can use their address, as long as it's not a P.O. box, to give somebody an address. And then you become their mailman. And we do that regularly. There are ways to do that. And that's the quick answer to your question.
Gabrielle.
Sure. I mean, we have a woman who does nothing but kind of help volunteers find ways to kind of connect with what we do. You can call 215-949-1727. It's actually, there's some sheets that I brought that have the number on it. You can call them and just ask for Michelle. Volunteers are an integral part of what we do, and there's lots of tasks that they perform. And the most important being, right, as we've been talking about, connecting with people on a community level, kind of facing whatever fear, whatever kind of anxiety might be present, and overcoming it, and walking through the door and saying, I'm going to be the face of hope, I'm going to be the face of whatever you want to bring in that's kind of will help someone else kind of reconnect to the community. We actually run a hotline. If you call us, we can give you a listing of like all the food pantries and everything in town, what's closest to whatever community you're a part of.
I will tell you that if you endeavor to use your building and connect with other churches, because you will need the support of other churches, that's where things really begin. The dialogue is important within the church community. And even though that sounds mundane, it's a necessity to begin talking to other churches about what your dream might be of doing that. In all likelihood, if you begin some sort of network, of cooperative churches that will do different things like coordinate meals. I think for the first 3 weeks, maybe 2 weeks, that we were open, just out of the gate, green, we had one guy and three people watching him sleep. And it took maybe 3 weeks for word to get around, and then you become a hub yourself. Your church telephone number becomes a beginning place, a kind of a first call type of thing. And even though beginning in that way can be messy, you find your own dynamics, the things that you're able to do, the things where you have resources. Some churches that work with us provide all the meals. We don't do anything except show up and stay up all night. And then there are other churches that we have to do dinner at night and put out a meal and do the dishes and do wake-up calls for people to go to work and clean and but we've developed a relationship within the church community, and you see a fuller body of Christ when it's not one church doing that. So even though it might not get your itch scratched right away, like I've really done something significant, I've made a can of soup, I've gave out sandwiches or something, it is really important, the dialogue. What you're doing here, it would be awesome to see in Bucks County a bunch of churches that are talking to each other and saying, you know what, I can do that, I can do that. And having maybe, a forum, a group meeting with a couple people who have that desire. And then it grows. It's what we have a tendency to want to do in church is we want to grow something real big, and I think Jesus talked about this unnatural thing, a mustard tree. There's such a thing as a mustard tree. Mustard seeds naturally grow this way, and they get into everything. And I think that's what we're called to do. As soon as we want to start an organization that's all about us, and it's real big, that looks an awful lot like the Tower of Babel to me, and it's not natural anymore. And he even said that birds of the air come and nest in its branches. And previously he said they're evil spirits. So getting your community involved and talking to churches and growing laterally that way and finding all the gifts that are already present in the church is the most significant thing that you can do in beginning something like that. And that becomes a blessing to the government officials, and your relationship included in that is how you talk with him, and how can you complement what they're doing at the American Red Cross, and how can you serve them? You see, and then this catches fire and grows.
Here's one suggestion: we all have talents and skills, and I have three little kids, and trying to teach them about the joy of reading, and with two boys, my girl is not a problem. She reads. My two boys, they'd rather be doing something else. So what I'm trying to teach them is focus on the things you like. When you say, well, I want you to be a good reader, but I have one kid who likes baseball. He's crazy about baseball, so I've been getting him all books about baseball. He doesn't know I have an ulterior motive, which is trying to get him to pick up on the habit of reading. Now, with volunteering, it's the same thing. I think you're not going to be able to, like, help the homeless. I think it's critical that you identify an area where you really have an interest. And there's so many things that you can do, and organizations will be more, they'll love you, I can tell you, if you volunteer. But whether it's tutoring a child, whether it's helping build self-esteem, whether it's teaching, it can even be as simple as teaching skills that some of us take for granted, like housekeeping or computer skills, things that really turn you on, get your juices going, and you really enjoy doing it, that's what's going to keep you volunteering and volunteering. Mm-hmm. I have an uncle of mine that says that volunteer, this is not the army. And so that has stayed with my family for a long time. So it's finding something you enjoy doing it, and you can communicate that excitement to folks. I'd also recommend that, in as much as you can, become familiar with the resources that are available. Back during the Clinton administration, there was a big push to try to hire homeless people, as some of you may remember. Well, that program is still around, but nobody talks about it. And
let me give you a name.
Businesses can take advantage of the work opportunity tax credit. And there is actually a $2,400 reimbursement for each adult that is hired. It can $1,200 for each summer youth hired, $4,800 for each disabled veteran hired, and I think it can go up to $9,000 for somebody who's on or has been on assistance for a long time. And eligible recipients include folks on temporary assistance to needy families or TANF, unemployed veterans receiving food stamps or veterans with service connected to a disability, ex-felons hired no later than the year after conviction or release from a prison, vocational rehabilitation referrals, food stamp recipients age 18 and through 40, recipients of supplemental security income or SSI, long-term family assistance recipients. So some of it can be as simple as getting the word out and saying, gee, if you hire this person, do you realize you can get some money back for what you're paying this person? And there's nothing wrong with appealing to people's greedy motives. And all kidding aside, but there's nothing with having a win-win situation or creating or referring people or just making them aware. Gee, if you can hire somebody, if you thought that you can do well while doing good. I think Ben Franklin was a big proponent of that, and he recommended that there's nothing wrong with doing well while doing good. Also becoming familiar with the programs that are available with funding. And, of course, these day and age, everybody's talking about funding cuts and what have you, and you see the horror stories, quote-unquote, coming from Harrisburg. But by knowing what's available, you can also become a better proponent of what can be done to assist folks in need. I'll tell you this. I mean, we have a housing program. We literally have funded everybody that's applied, literally. In some years, we've had funding to spare. Now, I would like to see competition, because competition certainly produces better projects, but it's quite a shame that we have money for affordable housing, and there's only one or two organizations that literally every year apply for it. And they do a tremendous job, don't get me wrong, whether it's Habitat or Interfaith, and they do a phenomenal job. Interfaith is by far our most active organization producing rental housing, and these folks do quite a job. I mean, nobody even comes close to them. As far as housing development for lower-income folks, they manage to find houses and turn them over either in the form of folks that rent or through lease to purchase. You know, through Interfaith, you can get a house for $1,000. Am I correct? Or close to it? Down payment? Down payment. That's a first-time home buyer. I mean, that's kind of unheard of. It's kind of one of the best-kept secrets. And they do, in fact, turn a lot of folks into homeowners. The housing group does it, too, in another program that we have through the counseling that they do and trying to bring people from homelessness into homeownership. So there's these programs out there. And, of course, it takes time, it takes patience, and it takes understanding of what can and can't be done. And there is a lot of barriers on the government. I mean, we kill people with paper, with regulations. It's just unbelievable, whether it's requiring an address or a lot more exotic things. But if you become more educated in terms of what's available, I think you can also make a contribution to the programs and how they operate.
All right. Rosemary. Yeah.
Thanks for being a mustard weed.
Yeah.
I'd like to say this one thing, and it's been said once or twice by some of the panelists. IHBC got started about 1984 because I had run a seminar at Dr. Martin Luther King's celebration. From that, we gather a group of churches and support other supporting groups to actually do something about the homeless shelter. Because the homeless shelter was out of a home and we wanted a permanent home. We worked through the churches and we bought attention to the homeless, to the county. So they start develop the homeless shelter, which opened, I think it was about 1980, or about somewhere in the area. Now, from that group, there were three or four of us churches who got together and moved the homeless shelter when they had no home from church to church. And we actually covered our 10 churches. I believe it was 1984. And the churches themselves, dealing with the homeless people and their problems, found out that the people were just not there. They thought the same way they thought. So they were really two parties. And in 1987, IHBC was founded. And our mission is to provide homes for affordable people, whether they buy them or rent. And we have been doing so ever since. And we're going strong. I was one of the founders. I was one of the ones who came up with the ideas. And they worked. And it was through by me being on the mission committee at the United Methodist Church of God that I got involved. So we're still going.
Thank you. Thank you so much. All right, these guys have been jumping up and down in the back, and I can't say no to them. So last question for the night here.
First of all, Gary, I just want to say tonight's really good. Do you have any suggestions on how Pastor Obi can, because I can't tell my people what to do. I can go back with great ideas, but it's got to come from the people. How do I make them aware of the homelessness in suburbia in such a way while also respecting the family, the homeless families? You understand what I'm saying? So I can't tell my daughter, hey, today I met with Susie's mom who came in for food and clothing, and she knew that Susie's homeless living out of the car. I can only kind of cloak it and say, hey, Hannah, the rest of my kids, hey, guys, you know, we need to be thinking about people in need because we don't realize that daddy talked to someone who you know. Is that clear?
Yeah.
So how do we make aware with our people while also respecting people in need without creating more of a chasm like, well, we need to help those people.
Yeah, you kind of disenfranchise people as soon as you make them a case. They feel that, too. In the church, what we do is qualify people. And that's, as a pastor, I've had to go through my own evolution in that, too. Because there are some people that you believe aren't deserving for whatever reason. I'm not necessarily talking about homelessness at this point. I mean, there are other... I have my struggles with the church, so I try to be as gentle and kind as I can. Part of my consternation with the church is that we isolate ourselves by creating programs. When we create a program, what we do is we spread things out and we engineer it in such a way that there's less impact on people. We become experts at efficiency. And there really is no substitute for knowing people. When I don't turn somebody into a program, and when they are my friend, I look at them and I treat them in an entirely different way. Another part of my consternation with the church is that pastors have been, at least in this part of the century, well, actually, I can retreat from that. I mean, ever since Constantine, we've been really good at administering things, making things happen by force, maybe, or whatever. Biblically, what we are as pastors is we are shepherd leaders. We are walking in a certain direction, and our flock will follow us into that direction because they hear our voice. And if they're not, then I got to question whether I'm really their pastor or not. There's a sensitivity that what we do as pastors, though, is we don't beat up our flock and force them to understand things. And so it places us in a really vulnerable position. Because I can't tell somebody to do something unless I'm willing to do it. I can show somebody how to open a shelter, to welcome people and not turn anyone away, to not require people to be Christians, to refrain from having to bark at them about religion, requiring them to be Christians, when what I'm doing is I'm asking me to be a Christian. So that's my approach to those kinds of things. What I do is I try to become, like Paul said, follow me even as I follow Christ. I am looking to see where the master has already gone, and I'm just trying to be faithful to follow him into that. And once I do, the folks that can hear it will follow along. And then there are some people on the periphery that maybe they're not going to follow it, but maybe they're looking. I have lots of Nicodemuses in my life that are coming at night and saying, what's going on? What is that about? And then what I get to do is I get to be just as personal with them as I would be with my friends in the homeless community, who truly are my friends. And I take it personally about finding them a place to live. And I take it personally about running them to a doctor's appointment. And I take it personally. And then I have the authority to call on the rest of the church. Do you see what I'm doing? Can you do that too? And you have a platform to do that from, and that's a pulpit. I sing the same tired song. I probably have a good half a dozen messages, if that. And they all have the same generic kind of spin on them, which is this particular subject. Because half of our ministry is not me ministering to the poor, it's ministering with the poor to the rest of the churches. And healing the church. That's kind of the approach that I take. So from the pulpit and every other interaction that I have in my life, I don't create programs, or I try not to. Some of that naturally happens. We are not wishy-washy and everything happens organically in the shelter, because we got a plan. Boy, do we got a plan. I get to see people in a different way. I get to see them as people. And I get to treat the people in the homeless community the same as I treat my friends who are maybe Nicodemus coming and asking me questions at night. And I don't have to change. My rhetoric doesn't change. The audience that's in front of me, it's kind of the same story. And our congregation, this is what we are about, because not celebrating me, I do not have pure motives most of the time. But it's because that's where I choose to lead the church. As gently as I can, and as tired as I become doing it, that's where I choose to go and do it very publicly so that they can see and come along too. Does that help, Jason?
Sure. If I'm okay. Hearing you saying, you know, befriend those people that come to us, and then invite, make situations aware by inviting those around me to enter into the relationship.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Is there
any suggestions?
Pardon me?
Just from the rest of many other suggestions on how to make, you know, I'm trying to respond to Gary's principle of how to make homelessness
I mean, I'm happy to come out and talk to your congregation whenever you want. I mean,
there you go.
We do that stuff all the time. I mean, when I worked in San Antonio, it was called I ran the San Antonio Metropolitan Ministries Emergency Shelter. It was 90 different congregations. Every night of the year, a congregation managed the shelter. In that kind of environment, you were dependent on different congregation every night of the year to staff something that housed 400 people 365 days a year. It's totally possible to get people the training, get people the expertise, get them comfortable to do that work. You know, pastors, one example, I mean, it's totally a model that can work. You know, we're happy to go out and speak to congregations. We do it all the time. So might get my number right there, or I'll give you my card afterwards.
Sure. I think for us, a big thing we've just tried to debunk is like that, yeah, you have to save the world. The fact is, it's not hard to meet people who are in poverty. They're everywhere. And if you get over the idea that you need to save the world and just talk to them and be friends with them and have them over for dinner and share a life with them, redemption usually shows up. And it's you know, not about, yeah, it's saving the world, but being friends with one person. I think that goes so far. Thank you all so much. We're already at overtime here. Let's keep talking as long as anybody can stay. We'll get the air conditioning back going, so it'll actually be nice in here. I know it's a hot, steamy night in here, and I want to thank you all so much for coming out tonight and just sharing this conversation. A couple quick thank yous. Thank you, of course, to all of our panelists. Trevor Pearson is back there. Trevor, if you could give a little wave to us. And Gabrielle Picari right here. They let me sit up here, but they're the ones who did all the hard work. They're the ones who sent you all the letters and knocked on all the doors and got everybody out here tonight. So make sure to give them a thank you on the way out. And also a couple people, Lee's Hoagies and Ben Salem. This is the corporate sponsorship time. Lee's Hoagies and Ben Salem, Primo's Hoagies and Trevo's, Giant and Applebee's and Toscana all donated some food to help make this happen tonight. So if you're at those places, give them a thank you, too. Thank you guys so much. We'll keep the building open as long as you guys want to stay, and we really just hope and pray that this is the beginning of more to come and not just the end, not just one event, but the start of something new. So thank you.